Hello and welcome to the podcast. This is Ron's Amazing Stories. We have stories that should thrill you a little and chill you a little.
It's amazing.
You will hear adventures sent in by you guys, classic stories from the pulp mags, and episodes from the golden age of radio. We have special segments like Ghost Stories with Sylvia.
That's amazing.
And the paranormal with Jason.
I think we're going to have a lot of fun.
So settle in for the next hour and enjoy the show. Oh, and you just might want to prepare yourself to be taken away from today.
Another 5-minute mystery.
This 5-minute mystery is being brought to you by The Detective. John Buchanan once said, "Every man, at the bottom of his heart, believes that he is a born detective." Here is your chance with this week's 5-minute mystery.
Well, Sergeant, if it hadn't been for your smart sleuthing, we never could have pinned those forgeries on Richie Albert.
I think you can take a little of the credit yourself.
He's sure to be sent up for a nice long term. Too bad all cases aren't just simple.
You mean the Forsythe case?
Exactly. Over 4 months old and we haven't cracked it yet. And I'm sure whoever forged those checks on Forsythe is the same person who murdered him.
Yes, it's obvious Forsythe found out who the forger was and the guy had to bump him off or get caught.
Funny. I wonder.
What's that, Inspector?
Maybe we've got the murderer right under our noses and don't know it.
You mean Richie?
It's only a wild stab on my part, but we could have the handwriting on the two forgeries analyzed.
Say, Inspector, I think you've got something there. At least it's worth a try.
It certainly is. Come on, Sergeant. We're going over to the lab right now.
Any news yet, Inspector?
Not yet. They've got one of their best experts working on the handwriting. I'm going to call as soon as the...
Uh-oh. That might be him now.
Inspector Kennedy speaking. Yes, Philip. I see. Okay, thanks a lot.
Well, Inspector?
That's the go-ahead, Sergeant. Hold down the fort. I'm going over to the city jail to pay a little call on Richie Albert.
What's the matter with you coppers? I confess I forged those checks last week. Why can't you leave a guy alone?
I thought maybe you might have something more on your mind you'd like to get off.
Like what?
Like admitting you forged some checks on that Samuel J. Forsythe last July. And that you bumped him off a month later.
Murder? Listen, you, I may work a little different for a living than you, but I don't get mixed up in no murders.
That doesn't mean you wouldn't.
Well, you're barking up the wrong tree this time. Besides, I wasn't any place near here last summer.
You'll have to prove that, Richie.
Sure, I can prove it. I was working as a bookie down south at the Kentucky Derby. You can hang that charge on top of me, but I ain't taking no murder raps.
You mind telling me how long you were down there, Richie?
For 2 months. From July right through September. And keeping my nose to the grindstone all along.
Richie, what if I told you the handwriting on your forged checks and the Forsythe checks were the same type?
So what if they are? I still didn't have nothing to do with it. I told you where I was when Forsythe was murdered.
I'd like to believe you, Richie, but I'm afraid I can't. You're going up for Sam Forsythe's murder.
How does Inspector Kennedy know Richie Alberts is lying? Do you know the clue? In a moment, we'll hear, but first...
Okay, we have a good FMM. A murder investigation, in fact, and I think that they're on the right track. Horse track. Get it? The guy said that he was out of town and that he was working at the Kentucky Derby during July. That sounds like a pretty good alibi. Maybe they do have the wrong guy. But if that's true, why does the forgery match his style? Let's head back and hear the detective's explanation.
And now, back to our story.
Inspector, you're a genius. Two cases cleared up and only one man jailed. But I still don't know how you did it.
Very simple, Sergeant. Quite simple. You see, knowing that the signatures on both the forgery cases were the same type was something to go on. Richie's having an alibi about his whereabouts at the time of the murder could have cleared him, except for one thing. An innocent man doesn't need to fake an alibi. You see, Richie couldn't have been at the Kentucky Derby last August, as he said, because the Kentucky Derby is run only in the spring. When we caught him on that one, he broke down and confessed. It looks like Richie's rubber checks are going to bounce him right into the hot seat.
Sounds like I nailed it. The Kentucky Derby takes place on the first Saturday in May each year. So how could our boy have been there in July? I have to say for the record that this FMM was spot on and followed the rules of a good mystery. Will wonders ever cease? Welcome to the podcast. It is Detective Week, and we have a full range of stories.
That sounds pretty good.
It does. We have two tales from retired policemen, and a Johnny Is It True segment with everything from a burning turtle to falling anvils.
Ron, I hate to ask, but did you say anvils?
I did. And they're just falling from the sky. Our featured story comes from Blake Edwards, the man who invented detective sarcasm. The story is called The 8 O'Clock Killer and is a Richard Diamond private detective mystery.
Is there anything else?
Nope. That's it.
Huh.
Just roll with it. This past Tuesday, I published an update as to the progress of These Are Your Stories project. We didn't have an audio component this week because of time and scheduling. Now, what is the project These Are Your Stories? While it is starting as blog posts, the plans are for a brand new podcast by the same name, or perhaps a different one. This will be a live call-in show. I will host it, and you will call in with your stories. I'm working through the logistics and have been doing some test runs, which will be posted as blogs. I've had two folks that wanted to be part of the testing, but the scheduling has not worked out. What I'm looking for are people who would like to be part of the process and have the time to do it. It shouldn't take more than 15 minutes of your time, and all you have to do is have a story to tell. It can be about anything and everything, and it can even be fiction. So please, if you want to be a guinea pig, let me know by heading to the main website and using the contact tab. All manner of stories are welcome, so please consider taking part. And now, this message from Audible. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/Ron's Amazing Stories. They have over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, computer, Kindle. Whatever you have, you can listen to Audible on it. So what am I listening to right now? The Sea in the Sky by Jackson Musker. This is not your normal storybook. It is officially a podcast and one that tells a story in 12 episodes. In this scripted Audible original, wisecracking marine biologist and astronaut B. Guerrero has signed up for a trip of a lifetime. A series of deep dives into the pitch-black waters of Saturn's moon, Enceladus. Here's a promo for the book.
Welcome. My name is Gordon Chu. I'm the flight director for NASA's Pisces mission.
Audible Originals presents The Sea in the Sky.
At 14:05 local time, on January 8th, 2037, Pisces 1 landed on Enceladus. The search for life begins tomorrow.
Are you alive, Ty?
And kicking, you?
I think so.
On the last manned mission to the furthest reach of space.
Heading down.
Grab that.
We faced an unknown world.
This is deeper than I've ever been, than anyone's ever been.
And an impossible reality.
I'm seeing some weird glimmers.
What is it, Lee?
This is all in my head. I'm just having trouble breathing.
In our search for life, what will we sacrifice?
Lee, you got nothing to prove.
I have everything to prove.
And will we succeed?
Damn it. B! Can you hear me? Send me something.
This is Flight Director Corbin Chu.
Dispatch 1002A, Tyler Winfield, Apache's mission. A lost B.
We can't change the fact that there was an accident.
Hi.
I'm so sorry, B.
It's incredibly unfortunate.
I'm coming over to you. Talk to me, Ty.
I'm so sorry.
This is Specialist Bianca Guerrero on Enceladus. I found something.
Only on Audible.
Does it sound exciting? I'm here to tell you this one does not disappoint. It's set in the near future when the global climate catastrophe has forced humans to search for solutions on new planets. The Sea in the Sky chronicles two astronauts' journey in what could be the final NASA-sponsored mission to space. In their search for life, Bee and Ty navigate untraveled waters, take on incredible risks, and confront some difficult truths about themselves. What will they find at the bottom of it all? Only time will tell. At times epic, laugh-out-loud funny, and achingly sorrowful, The Sea in the Sky plumbs the depths of science and faith, triumph and failure. The Audible original drama is told through daily dispatches sent from the space shuttle back to Earth. It uses original music and original sound design and a full cast of actors. Also, this podcast does not require a credit. It is free to all Audible Premium Plus subscribers. How about that? Bottom line about The Sea in the Sky? Well, it's best discovered through its tagline. Dive into a world you need to hear to believe. And you can have this one today. Here's what Audible has set up for us. They are offering a free audiobook and 30 days to give you the opportunity to check out their service. To download your free audiobook, go to audibletrial.com/Ron's Amazing Stories. Again, that's audibletrial.com/Ron's Amazing Stories, and you too can have The Sea in the Sky. Thank you, Audible. And now, it's time for your stories.
These are your stories, sent by you, for you.
It is Detective Week on the show, and that is carrying over to These Are Your Stories. Our first one comes from a real detective. Sergeant Clifford Lindsay, retired, of Orlando, Florida, sent in this UFO story that he says happened in the 80s. He was a patrol officer at the time, and to this day has no explanation for what he saw. Here is Clifford's story titled, My Drag Race with a UFO. I was working the late shift in December of 1983. My partner was at the station filling out some paperwork from an arrest earlier in the evening. It was Friday night, and I was driving down what is known as Drag Street. The local kids used it to test their souped-up engines to race each other. It was late, and even the racers were probably in bed. I was stopped at a light when I saw, and strangely enough, felt a car pull up next to me. I turned to look, and I'll never forget what I saw. Floating there was a craft of the likes I had never seen. It was oval, surrounded by a green glow, and it hummed, the vibrations of which was causing me some discomfort. It was pitch black in color and had no windows that I could see. I was about to call it in when the thing shot forward with unreal speed. My first thought was, that the dang thing had run a red light, and on instinct I flipped on my lights and siren and took out after it. I might as well have been on a tricycle because it was gone. I pulled to the side of the road, took a deep breath, and decided not to call this one in. I resumed my patrol. After a few minutes, I noticed a group of teenagers in a local park. It was late, but not so late that they were breaking the law, so I decided to let them be. However, as I passed, they started waving at me frantically. I pulled to a stop, and two of them ran up to my car. After a lot of wild words, crazy sentences, and I thought that they were probably high, I told them to calm down and tell me what happened. It appears that they were actually quite sober and were having a birthday party for one of their group. They described the same craft that I had seen in detail and that it had crashed their party. It sent them scattering and diving in all directions, shot up into the sky, and then vanished. They were quite shocked when I told them that I believed them and related my story. Now, you think that this would be the end of my tale, but there is an epilogue. There were 14 calls that night to dispatch of folks having seen the same craft. Descriptions varied, but for the most part, the green glow and oval shape was consistent. I never told anyone of my experience except friends and family. It is a true story, and one that has turned me into an amateur ufologist. Clifford Lindsay, Orlando, Florida. Wow, these are the type of stories that are the best because it comes from a credible source. I had the pleasure to talk to Clifford on the phone and write his story. I've heard stories like this before, and it leads me to wonder if there are some aliens out there who might just have a sense of humor. Thank you for your story, Clifford. It truly is amazing. I love a story that presents us with a unique point of view. I received the following email from a gumshoe. I thought, how timely is that? While it's not a long story, it does show us some of what the modern private detective's job is like. So here is an email from Sergeant Jason Ames, California Highway Patrolman, retired. His story is titled, The Stupid Perp. Since my retirement in 2009, I became bored and decided to take odd jobs from a local detective agency. I get to pick the cases I work on, but there are times that they will call me in and ask me to fill in. This was one of those times. The case was one of stolen identity. Most of the time, there's not much we can do to help victims of this type of crime, but in this case, the perp was known, and my agency was hired to follow her and catch her using fake IDs or credit cards. I took over from another detective about 3 p.m. in the afternoon. Our agency uses cars that, on the outside, shall we say, are low-key. However, inside they have the very latest gadgets. There are hidden cameras everywhere. There are microphones, lots of different kinds, from the standard old parabolic type to a laser scope that would blow your mind. The car will lock up tighter than a prison, and it's bulletproof. To top it off, a custom computer system runs everything and is tied back to the home office. The cigarette lighter has been replaced, and it serves as a two-way switch. Turn it to the right, and everything starts to record, and the home office is notified. Smash it down, and you just hit the panic button. The police and home office are on their way. We were doing an old-fashioned stakeout of a motel where the perp had been staying. I settled in, and after about an hour, the passenger car door opened. A large man got in the car and sat down. I reached over and turned the cigarette lighter to the right. After a rather heated exchange, basically he wanted me gone or I would be killed, I told him to open the glove box. He did so, and that revealed a small monitor. After a moment, it came to a life with his picture and description of his latest crimes. Also, he had a bounty on his head and was wanted for armed robbery and assault. The look on the man's face was priceless. He tried to open the door, but I had locked it and had my .38 in hand. After 2 minutes more, the police were there and the man was in custody. The last thing he asked me was, "How did I know?" To which I said, "We didn't." I don't know whatever happened to him, but in the end, we did catch the girl using a stolen credit card, and she's currently in jail, serving 10 years. I was the lead witness for the prosecution on that one. Sergeant Jason Ames, California. I love this story. Simple, but yet quite descriptive. In my head, I can hear the banter between you two and can imagine the tension and relief when the police arrived. Were you really as calm as you sounded? Thank you, Sergeant, for your story, and I'm happy that you remain safe. Our last story doesn't fit the mold of a detective story, but it is a real head-scratcher. So put on your detective hats and see if you can help Lorna Kane from Detroit, Michigan, solve this one. She has titled it, Strange Tornado Thing. Hello, Ron. Love the show and wanted to contribute. It isn't much of a story, but it has bugged me for years. Maybe you or one of my fellow listeners knows what this is. I was 8 or 9 years old when this happened. I was outside rummaging around for berries and other things to crush to make paint for rocks. It was a little windy, but nothing intense, until a few gusts whipped up, suddenly making me pause and survey the yard. It was a long yard on a slope that ended in an empty lot that extended into the street. In the left corner was this mini tornado. It was about as big as I was and was moving up the hill towards me. I stood kinda off to the side as it moved past me. It moved with purpose through the front door and into the house. I followed it. It paused in the dining room over the table and stirred up some papers there and threw everything onto the ground. I was dumbfounded because I knew what I was seeing wasn't possible, and then I just gaped as it moved back out of the house and out the front door again. At this point, I was curious and I knew it would disappear, so I ran after it as fast as I could, but it dissolved as soon as I reached out for it. I was crushed and regretted not catching it that day. It's one of the strangest things to have ever happened to me. So my question to you is this. Have you ever heard of anything like this before? Do you know what it might have been? Lorna Kane, Detroit, Michigan. Well, Lorna, I have no clue, and we have not had a story like this one before. I did do some research and found a few stories about ghost tornadoes that exhibit odd movements. The closest example was a woman who swears that a tornado moved through her bedroom, but she felt no wind from it. It passed through the wall and was gone. There's so much that we don't know about the other side, and I suspect that things operate much differently there. Thank you for sharing your story, and perhaps a listener will know something about this. I surely do not. Well, those are your stories for this time. If you have a story that you would like to share, like Lorna did, head to the main website at ronsamazingstories.com and click on the story submission banner. And please remember to title your tale and tell me where you're from. Make your stories our stories. Our featured story for this time comes from the creative genius, Blake Edwards. In case you don't know that name, he's the guy behind the Pink Panther movies and, of course, Richard Diamond, Private Detective. Diamond is a rough gumshoe that would often work with his counterpart on the police force, Lieutenant Levinson, which, by the way, is the case today. Our story is called The 8 O'Clock Killer, and it first aired in December of 1950.
Listen while the makers of Rexall drug products and 10,000 independent Rexall family druggists bring you Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, private detective. Good health to all from Rexall. Now your Rexall family druggist brings you a transcribed half hour with Richard Diamond, private detective, starring Dick Powell.
If it ain't Richard Diamond, the smiling gumshoe.
Well, if it ain't Sergeant Otis, the laughing hyena. The lieutenant in?
Yeah, go on in and spoil his afternoon.
You know, Otis, I think you've got the kindest, most wonderful face in the whole wide world.
You do?
Absolutely. But I do wish you'd do me a favor.
Well, sure, anything.
Stop wearing it upside down. Hello, Walt.
Hello, Rick. Sit down.
Oh, thanks. What's doing?
Want a sandwich?
I'll take some of that coffee.
Sure. Something on your mind, Rick?
No, just got tired of sitting around the office.
No business?
Not in a week. Got any sugar?
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Here. Yeah, Otis?
Lieutenant, I got some guy on the phone who won't give me his name. Says he wants to talk to you. Matter of life and death.
Okay, put him on.
Right.
Homicide, Lieutenant Levinson.
I'm going to say this once, so listen carefully. Tonight, somewhere in New York City, I'm going to kill a man, and there's nothing you can do about it.
What?
Promptly at 8 o'clock, somewhere in this city, I'm going to kill a man.
Hello? Hello?
Something wrong?
Some guy says he's going to kill somebody at 8 o'clock tonight.
Oh, dandy.
Crank.
Did he say who his victim is going to be?
No, just a crank.
I should have humored him. Made suggestions. My landlord, for instance.
Be a little gruesome if he really did it.
Yeah. You'd have a hard time protecting 8 million people from a killer you don't know anything about.
Hope it was just a crank. Otis.
Yeah, Lieutenant.
If that guy calls back, put him through and trace the call.
Right.
It sure would be miserable if that call was on the level.
Oh, relax. I'll have some more coffee. I had some more coffee. Walt worried a little, not a lot, because the big precinct caters to a good number of cranks every day. We talked about old times, and around 6, I matched Walt for dinner. He stuffed himself at the automat until I ran out of change and begged for mercy. Then he dropped me off at my flat on 53rd and went back to the precinct. I showered, shaved, slipped into my blue suit, and headed for the door. Yeah.
Do me a favor, will you, Rick?
You gotta stop stuffing yourself, Walt. You sound like you got indigestion.
I'm down at the morgue. Meet me here, please.
Oh, now look, I got a date with a live one.
I'm in on the start of some trouble. It's liable to grow. That guy who called made good. He stabbed a man to death on Broadway at 8 o'clock.
Here he is, Lieutenant.
Hello, Walt.
Hi, Rick. Thanks for coming down. Okay, Hal.
Who is he? Who was he?
Brother identified him, Abraham Weiss. Stabbed in the heart from behind with a long, thin instrument.
On Broadway at 8 o'clock.
That's right. Dozen people saw him stagger to the curb and fall. Most of them just thought he was drunk.
You think your boy on the phone did it?
8 o'clock, right on the nose. Whoever did it must have walked up behind him, jabbed him just below the left shoulder blade, and kept on walking.
What do you want me for, Walt?
If this guy on the phone did kill Abraham Weiss, and we can't find a motive, It's a little more than a simple killing. We may be mixed up with a madman.
Oh, so I qualify in that league.
You're one of the few guys who really is interested in criminal psychology.
Well, I think it's the answer. You can't stop something unless you know the cause.
Will you give me a hand, Rick?
Sure, sure.
I've got Weiss's family at the station.
Let's go see them.
Why? Why, Lieutenant? Why did this happen to Abe?
That's what we're going to try and find out, Mrs. Weiss. We were hoping you might help us.
Oh, he didn't have any enemies. He was a good man. We have three children. I left them with Mrs. Bilotti, my neighbor. It's going to be hard on them.
You're sure your husband didn't know it?
No. He didn't have any enemies. He was a good husband and a good father. Everybody liked him. Well, only last week, Mrs. Dowd up the street from us told me.
We'd like a list of your brother's friends, Mr. Weiss. Where he worked, people he had business with, anyone you can remember who might give us a lead.
Been sitting out there thinking about that. There just isn't anyone that I know would want to kill Abe. He was a good guy, did his job, took care of Louise and the kids. He didn't bother nobody.
How long were Louise and Abe married?
Six years. Maybe a little more.
Nice girl, Louise.
Oh, the best. A good wife.
What happens to her now?
I'll take care of him.
You're not married, huh?
No.
Quite a job, taking care of a widow and three kids.
I'm doing all right. It's the least I can do.
You got a girl?
Yeah, why?
Maybe you're going to get married, huh?
Well, I'm engaged. I've been thinking about it. It'll have to wait for a while, I guess. Until Louise gets back on her feet.
Okay. Tell us about some of your brother's friends.
Well, I guess his best friend was Art Brearley. They was awful close for years.
He told us about everyone he could think of. Gave us a dozen names and addresses we could check. Like Louise, Martin couldn't figure why anyone would want to kill Abraham Weiss. The next was Mrs. Rebecca Weiss. Tired. The hurt in her eyes enough for all the mothers who had raised a son and lost him.
We'll try not to keep you too long, Mrs. Weiss.
It's all right, Lieutenant. You want to help.
Would you like a glass of water?
No, no. When will I be able to see my son? It's right that I should see Manson.
A few questions first, if you don't mind.
I know you're trying to help. Just me a few questions. As many as you like, Lieutenant.
Not long with Mrs. Rebecca Weiss. Nothing that would help to catch her son's killer. So we checked the people who had known Abraham, and there were plenty. His boss gave us a few more names to add to the long list. All of them friends who couldn't imagine why anyone would want to kill a nice guy like Abe. At 7:30 the next morning, Walt looked at reports and poured more coffee.
Here. I'll put sugar in it.
Thanks.
If that phone call was on the level, why would a guy kill like that? Call us and tell us he was going to do it. What'd be his reason?
Well, couldn't guess. But if that guy who called did do the killing, you can bet he'll phone again.
Why?
Well, he bragged he was going to do it. He'll want the credit.
Well, I gotta get some rest. A couple of hours anyway.
Let's both get a couple. Yeah.
Sorry.
It doesn't matter. Lousy dream. What time is it?
5:00.
Oh, I died, didn't I?
Our boy called again.
Oh? You trace it?
Phone booth in Grand Central.
What do you have to say?
Not much. Wanted to know how we liked his handiwork.
What's a good answer to that one?
Well, I said a few things, but I guess he figured we weren't satisfied, so he promised he'd kill somebody else tonight.
Hello, Rick. Seen the papers?
Nope.
Here.
Fiend terrorizes city. Unknown killer murders at will. Police baffled.
Everybody's on my back.
Exactly. What did he say?
You want to hear? I made a recording.
Let's hear it.
Okay, Otis, put him on.
Hello, Lieutenant.
Yeah?
What do you think now, Lieutenant? I did what I said I was going to do, didn't I?
Look, who is this?
The man who called yesterday and said he was going to kill someone at 8 o'clock last night.
I don't believe it.
Well, certainly you do. You'd like to stall so you could have this call traced. Well, you'd better listen. I want everybody to know just how stupid the police force really is. I'm going to kill again tonight, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Look, you, whoever you are, if it's the last thing I ever do, I'll...
Tonight at 8, another innocent victim will die because the police can do nothing about it.
Hello. Hello. Otis. The call came from a phone booth in Grand.
He said another innocent victim.
Yeah, so he's a nut. For some reason, he hates the police force. There's your motive.
Well, I guess it's possible, but something sticks in my craw.
Yeah? What?
8 o'clock. Why pick 8 o'clock both times?
Well, I guess, like you said, he wants the credit. We're liable to get a couple of killings in an evening. He wants us to be sure which one he did.
Okay, so he makes it 8 o'clock the first time. Why the second? Why not 6 or 7 or 10 or...
Just following a pattern, I guess.
Maybe so. Well, what'll we do?
I got every man possible on the streets. But, Rick, let's face it, this is a pretty big city. And at 6-2 and even, if he does kill again, it won't be anywhere near the scene of his first stabbing.
I guess we just wait.
Yeah. A little over an hour to go.
So, we waited. Walt got the coffee going, and I went through a whole package of cigarettes. Somewhere in the middle of New York, probably on a crowded street, a man was walking, waiting like we were for 8 o'clock. Waiting to stab someone through the heart. Waiting for 8 o'clock.
Want coffee?
No.
Give me a cigarette.
You don't smoke.
Want a bet?
Here.
Got a match?
Got a lighter. This is no good.
Yeah? Let's go.
Where to?
Entrance to Madison Square Garden. Man stabbed to death in the crowd going into the fights. Right at 8 o'clock.
A man murdered going into Madison Square Garden to see the fights. Stabbed through the heart while he stood in the middle of the large crowd. We went through the same routine, identify the body, question witnesses who had been close to him, see his friends, anyone who knew him.
Name's Leon Ellis, small-time fight manager. No family, handles a young kid named Billy Martin. Wasn't fighting last night.
At 10 o'clock the next morning, we found Billy Martin working at the East Side Gym. We talked to him for a while, but he couldn't help much. So we kept going. Making our list of names, talking to everyone, all morning and into the afternoon. By 4:30, we were holding each other up.
Look, we're working with a madman who kills anybody close to him so he can show how helpless we are to stop him. The whole city's in a panic. The newspapers are blasting everybody in the department, yours truly in particular. Yeah?
I got him on the line again. He even bragged to me about this last killing.
Trace it as fast as you can.
Right.
Start that recorder, Rick. It's our boy again.
Okay. Go ahead.
Fifth Precinct, Lieutenant Levinson.
You can skip the formalities, Lieutenant. Your sergeant told you who was on the line. Well, I did it again last night, didn't I, Lieutenant?
Okay, so we can't stop you. I admit it. I'll admit it to the papers. That should make you happy. The police department can't do anything about it. That's what you want, isn't it?
Again tonight, Lieutenant. One more person will die.
Now, wait a minute. At least give me a chance to talk to
you. While you trace the call? No. Tonight at 8 o'clock, and you can't stop me.
Hello? Yeah?
Call came from a phone booth in Rockefeller Center.
Picks the right place to call from. We look pretty silly rounding up everybody in Rockefeller Center.
Walt looked sick, and I felt it. What could we do? We knew nothing about our killer or where he'd strike next. Walt called in the reporters and gave them the story. The papers would blast to the department, but it was the best way to warn the public to stay off the streets. The department was alerted, radio stations were given bulletins to broadcast, and Walt and I climbed into a prowl car and started cruising. At 8:05, it came in.
Attention, all units in the vicinity of Zone 12. A 211 in front of 415 West 64th. 415 William 64. Ambulance, dead body. Car 73, come in, please.
73, go ahead.
211 at 415 West 64 is a stabbing, Lieutenant.
Roger. That's it, Rick.
The victim was an elderly man dressed expensively and lying face down on the sidewalk. Again, no witnesses to the killing. Most of the people who had seen the man fall realized almost immediately what had happened because of the publicity on the last two killings. But like one man said...
Well, how are you going to see who killed him in a crowd like this? Maybe 100 people on the block when it happens. Boy, you guys better start doing something.
Yes, sir?
Does Mr. Arthur Reeves live here?
Yes, sir, but Mr. Reeves is not in at the moment.
I'm from the police. Lieutenant Levinson, homicide.
Homicide?
I'd like to talk with everybody in the house.
Certainly, sir. Has something happened to Mr. Reeves?
He's been murdered.
Oh, no. No, not Mr. Reeves.
How many people in the house?
Myself, the maid, and Mr. George Reeves, Mr. Reeves' nephew.
Tell him I'd like to talk with him.
And we talked with the three people in the dead man's house. The maid, the butler, and George Reeves, the nephew.
I warned him not to take his walk tonight. I showed him the papers.
Did he usually take walks at night?
That's for the past 15 years.
Know why anyone would want to kill him?
Mr. Reeves? Of course not. You know very good and well it was that fiend what did it.
How about you? Can you think of why anyone would want to kill your employer?
No, sir. I've been with Mr. Reeves for over 20 years. I'm acquainted with most of his friends and associates.
Look here. I can assure you that my uncle knew no one who would want to kill him.
You're his nephew?
That's right.
Your uncle took walks every night?
Yes, every night.
Well, if you don't mind, we'd like you all to come down to the station to make statements.
Okay, we got the statements, another list of names, and a long one. None of these killings tie together. Nobody on the first list has any connection with anybody on the second list. Let's face it, if that madman calls again, we can't stop him.
Oh, take it easy,
will you? Can we?
I want to talk to the maid, the butler, and the nephew again.
Why? It's just the same as all the others.
I want to talk to them, okay?
I'm sorry. Getting jumpy.
No, you're tired. So am I.
Otis, send in the maid. What are you doing?
Fixing the recorder. I may want to listen to it again. So we again talked to the maid, then the butler, then the nephew, and the tape recorder picked up everything they said, and it sounded very much like everything everybody else had said after the first two killings. Walt let them go home and went up to talk to the commissioner. When he came back, he looked pretty discouraged.
I'm sure on the griddle. Solve it or turn in my badge.
I want you to listen to something.
Oh, sure.
I've cut out sections of tape, stuck them together.
Mr. Reeves took walks every night after dinner, and dinner was always at 7?
That's right.
Then he always left sometimes close to 8?
Yes, 7:30 or a quarter to 8.
He was never gone more than half an hour?
No.
What time did he leave tonight?
About a quarter to 8. Weren't you worried when he didn't come back within half an hour?
Well, certainly. Both the maid and I were very anxious.
Were you all in the house between a quarter of 8 and the time we arrived?
Yes, sir.
Where was Mr. Reeves' nephew?
In his room. He went up right after dinner.
How wealthy was your employer?
He was very wealthy.
Mr. Reeves, who inherits your uncle's fortune?
Why, I do.
Was Mr. Reeves ever longer than half an hour with his walks?
Never more than a few minutes, one way or the other.
Who handles your uncle's affairs, Mr. Reeves?
Well, Richard B. Gregg. He's been my uncle's attorney for many years.
Young Mr. Reeves has always been excitable. Gotten a lot of trouble in the past.
Yes, he argued with his uncle many times. No, Mr. Reeves didn't come down and ask why his uncle had been gone so long. Certainly I worried about my uncle. But I thought he might have stopped along the way for something or other.
Okay, so you took out pieces of the testimony and stuck them together. So what?
Just this. Every one of these killings have taken place at 8 o'clock.
I know, and it's worried you.
Now, this is the first time that one of our victims was certain to be out on the streets at 8 o'clock.
Coincidence.
Maybe, maybe. Mr. Reeves was a wealthy man, very wealthy.
And the nephew gets his money, and the nephew was in his room at the time of the killing.
Who saw him?
The butler and the maid both say he was up there.
So he climbs out a window. His uncle was killed only two blocks from the house. Plenty of time to stab him, get back through the window.
You're really reaching out, aren't you?
Sure I am. What do you want me to do?
Well, the nephew's voice certainly doesn't match the ones we got on the threatening phone calls.
So he disguises it. I got an idea.
What?
Let's put a tail on all three of these people anyway. It's not much. It's all we've got so far. I'm going out to check on something. What? Here's something that'll make your hair curl. I just saw the attorney for the Reeves estate, and he said the old man was planning on changing his will, leaving all his money to charity, not his nephew. He was supposed to meet with Mr. Reeves this morning.
And Reeves gets killed last night.
Pretty convenient for the nephew.
We can't arrest him on that.
No, but it makes a good motive.
You think the nephew would kill two men and then his uncle, just so it would look like a madman had picked out another innocent victim?
You gotta admit, it'd be pretty clever.
There's an understatement. Yeah.
He's on the line again, Lieutenant. I'm tracing it.
Oh, no. Our boy again. There goes your theory. Hello.
You can't do anything, Lieutenant. I've killed three men, and you can't stop me. I'm going to kill again tonight at 8.
Hello? It was him, all right. Tonight at 8. Rick, we've just got to do... Yeah?
Call came from Grand Central again.
Okay. Well, what happens to your theory now? Well,
he might do it again. Expect you to react just this way. Who's tailing George Reeves?
Harrison.
When does he report in again?
Checks in on the hour. Last time was about 20 minutes ago.
40 minutes to go, huh? No way of contacting him?
Nope.
Okay, we wait.
Yeah? Yeah? Where was he at 4:46? Don't let him out of your sight.
Well?
At 4:46, George Reeves made a phone call from a booth in Grand Central Station. He's home now.
Well, we had something. A motive and a man calling from Grand Central, but not enough to make an arrest. We waited until 7 and then headed for the Reeves house.
The area is surrounded. He'll have two men on him no matter where he goes.
He's still in the house?
According to Harrison.
No, I want to do more than pick him up with a knife.
Here he comes.
Yeah. Climbing into his car.
Attention, cars 3, 14, 15. Suspect heading east. Proceed east on your streets.
We tailed him, keeping in contact with the other cars as they stayed parallel. When Reeves turned off, we went on ahead, notified the car on our right or left to pick him up. That way Reeves wouldn't suspect a tail. About 7:30, we got a call that Reeves had parked. We headed for the spot in a hurry.
Suspect is heading north on Calder.
Well, get ahead of him. Park at the corner of Davis. We'll pick him up there. We stopped at the corner and got out of the car. We waited until we spotted Reeves walking in our direction and then let him pass and followed, staying close. We kept after him until 8:05. He swung out on Broadway and was pushing his way through the crowd. Then it happened.
Where'd he go?
We've lost him. Come on.
8:03.
Let us through, please.
Well, I never...
Get out of the way.
Who you push?
Look out, please.
You see him turn off?
No, he's got to be... Walt, crossing the street.
Let's go.
Reeves.
What? No. Look out for the knife. No. Let me go. Let me go. Drop it.
You okay?
Yeah. Here's the knife.
Young man, what right have you got to hit that nice gentleman? He was helping me across the street. I have a good mind to report...
Lady. If this man was helping you across the street, just forget about him. Go bet on a horse or something. This is your lucky night.
Right when you need it most, Rexall scientists have developed a wonderful new product, Rexall Sunburn Cream, available now at Rexall drugstores everywhere. Thank you. Richard Diamond, Private Detective, stars Dick Powell in the title role and was written by Blake Edwards with music composed and conducted by Frank Worth. Dick Powell directed the RKO production Split Second, which is now in release. And his latest film appearance was in the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer award-winning The Bad and the Beautiful. Richard Diamond, Private Detective, is transcribed in Hollywood by Jaime Del Valle. This is Bill Foreman inviting you to be with us next Sunday at this time when Rexall Drug Products again bring you Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
I thought that was a pretty creative story. Dick Powell starred as Richard Diamond. He was a singer, actor, voice actor, film producer, film director, and even a head of studio. He came to stardom as a musical comedy performer, but then he showed some versatility by successfully transforming himself into a hard-boiled detective. He actually was the first actor to portray Philip Marlowe on the big screen. The film was called Murder, My Sweet, and was based on Raymond Chandler's 1940s novel, Farewell, My Lovely. How about that?
Johnny, is this true?
As you know by now, I like to surf the internet to find the strange and unusual. I do this in the name of the podcast, but the truth is, I would do it anyway, even if there was no podcast. What you're about to hear is...
Johnny, is this true?
I will tell you a story and then ask the question, did I make it up or is it true? Your job is to decide. Let's get started.
Johnny, is this true?
Welcome back to the Stories of the Strange and Unusual. The RES game segment of which could be true or just a load of potato dung. Your job is to decide. Here we go. Story 1. Our first story is about an angry British tortoise who managed to set his house on fire on purpose and on Christmas Day. Also, the little guy didn't look thrilled when firefighters extinguished the blaze and saved his shell. Now, is a mad face on a turtle even possible? Is this story even true? It is. The 45-year-old reptile was home alone in an Essex flat when he knocked over a heat lamp, setting his bed afire. A neighbor heard the smoke alarm and alerted authorities. Crews managed to extinguish the fire and found the surly, soot-covered tortoise inside. One of the first responders posted this on Facebook. This 45-year-old tortoise might look angry, but it's his lucky day. Responding to the post, one person asked if the neighbor who raised the alarm was another tortoise. "Don't be silly," was the response. "It would take too long for a tortoise to get to the phone." How about that? I will have a picture of our turtle in the show notes. Story 2. Janet Millship of Lexington, Kentucky, was on a walk in a local park when an anvil fell from the sky and nearly struck her. It smashed into the pavement, causing considerable damage. Where the anvil came from was at first unknown. After some investigation, it was discovered that it fell from a private transport plane carrying blacksmith supplies on its way to a medieval cosplay event in Florida. The anvil was nearly 200 years old and was on loan from the Oyster Ponds Historical Society. The artifact should have been destroyed in the fall, but miraculously, it was left unharmed. Now it's time for you to decide. Did this happen, or is it fake news? This one's totally fake. I made this one up, and everything was manufactured. Well, except for the Oyster Ponds Historical Society. They are real, and their mission is to collect, preserve, and interpret the history of the Orient and to celebrate its culture through education, exhibition, and scholarship. Story 3. Next from the annals of the strange, since mid-November, shining metal monoliths has suddenly appeared and then vanished in the strangest of locations. They've appeared from the Utah desert to a Romanian mountainside. And believe it or not, one just popped up outside a Pittsburgh candy store. Much like in the movie 2001, people have come from around the world to place their hand on the thing, hoping for guidance during our time of trouble. Now, is this true or yet another figment of Ron's dementia? This one is a fact. The owner of the store said he was captivated by the sculptures that made headlines starting in November. The first appearing in Utah's Red Rock County, vaguely resembling the so-called monoliths in Stanley Kubrick's 1968 film 2001, A Space Odyssey. Capitalizing on the intrigue surrounding the other monoliths and hoping to provide a distraction from the daily drumbeat of COVID-19 news, the owner of Grandpa Joe's Candy Shop, Christopher Beers, commissioned the 10-foot-tall, 24-inch-wide mythical structure. There is a mystery behind it, said Beers. Hopefully it's a reminder to support the small local businesses that have been so badly hit. And isn't it fun to have something to talk about besides the pandemic? I don't know about that, but I will have a picture of one of the real monoliths in the show notes. The most recent one showed up atop Pine Mountain in Central California. How very strange. Story 4. Have you ever been struck by lightning? Winston Kemp walked away from his lightning strike with a beautiful fractal tattoo. Experts say that it was likely a ground strike in which lightning spills over the ground around the impact of a direct hit. Winston didn't even know he was hit until a few hours later when his arms started hurting. Blisters soon formed, and those eventually healed into a beautiful fractal pattern, which he still has to this day. Now, this just doesn't happen. Or does it? It does happen, and I will have a link to the photo in the show notes. Thankfully, every lightning strike is not a fatal strike. According to the National Weather Service, 90% of lightning strike victims survive, though survivors can still be left with lingering health issues. In the case of Winston Kemp, he was left with a totally free tattoo as a reminder of just how amazing Mother Nature can be. Well, that's it for this time. I hope you found these stories truly informative, or maybe at least fun. Do you have any unusual or strange stories that you want to share? Send them to Ron's Amazing Stories, and I'll use them, if I can. That was episode number 469, and Clifford Lindsay, Jason Ames, and Lorna Kane are all responsible for what you heard today. Thank you, guys. If you want to follow the podcast or the blog, head to ronsamazingstories.com. There you will find any of the links I mentioned and how to contact us. Do you want to help the show? The best thing you can do is to tell your friends all about it, and please leave reviews or feedback wherever you listen. Clicking that follow or like button makes us grow. Thank you for listening, and I hope you come again to find out what are Ron's Amazing Stories.